One after that, another boost session, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? That's it. That's good. So, the day after, Ivo started by presenting us an unknown American, Henry Becquerel. So that was interesting, really. He mentioned also the fact about the effective dose equivalent is not meaningful for individuals. But the risk is related to age. So the younger you are, the more at risk you are. I mean, from radiation therapy, sorry, it's not everything else. And as for low dose, it was still unknown, basically, the risk is unknown. Is that correct? Yeah, it's good. Yeah. The other thing I noticed in Hugo's presentation is that he had a concept of the formalism of MERD. MERD in French means something else, but M-I-R-D actually in English. So it did wake me up at the time when I heard it, but anyway. Then we had Roger's presentation was about translational imaging, basically, which is a bridge between in vitro and the human. So that's a preclinical imaging. That's an essential step of research stage. The interesting thing, of course, is that you can acquire images. Basically, all the modalities for humans are represented in the preclinical system. You have even more modalities there. But when you want to do processing which are similar to the ones you would apply to human data, you need to convert your data so that they actually are understood as human data. I did that several times. I had a problem at some point when we had a navigating system for surgery which was retuned on humans. I could not turn it down, but I mean, imaging was, it's fine. Yeah. Then we had Asha talking to us, presenting Theranostic. Theranostics is basically using similar compounds for imaging as a surrogate of basically deposition, and then putting a killer isotope instead of an imaging isotope. So in this case, that's lutetium-177, seems to be the only one. and then figure out how it's going to kill the tumor cell. The main problem is that it's not none of these tracers are really highly specific. They don't go only to the target, they go elsewhere in the body. So internal dosimetry is key, and it's not an easy problem to solve. I'm just trying to present where you can contribute probably. Then it was back to Roger. This one was about further translation, about quantification, pharmacokinetic modeling, meaning that the information in the images is not only static, particularly in functional imaging, so you need actually to have full sequence for the acquisition, and then from that extract the parameters in full pharmacokinetic compartmental analysis. Uwe mentioned something, which is to remember that signal is in the tumor. So it's not because you see something on an image that it's true. Remember the migrate pipe and this kind of thing. So it's always, in medical imaging it does apply to. And then of course the step we need to go to our precision and personalized medicine. The concepts are a little bit different, but I'm not going to go into details. You can look it up. Now, after that, it was Marina. Marina presented to us, she's not here, but another Skopje Imaging Center, which is very well configured. I mean, we all thought it was a great venue for anyone in the world, basically. So, and it actually pointed, there was a discussion, which is, I think, of interest here, is that clearly that setup can be scaled up, but that means also that actually putting together the different sites in national or regional fashion will definitely boost, improve their potential for region. Then it was Marco, and of TOFPET US ultrasound. Okay, so that's the development of a TOFPET probe, which can be combined with an ultrasound endoscope, so you can have multimodality imaging, obviously. The application would be for diagnostic and interventional applications. There was a notion of multi-digital SIPM, so which was actually key to that detector. And again, this instrumentation development, it's still ongoing. I mean, it's not like we have a bunch of detectors, we're going to put them together and we have a machine. We'll come back to that with Roger later on. There was also a discussion, I mean, something which was interesting in discussion is the need for funding bodies, the EU or any other funding bodies, to figure out how to bridge the gap between the academic development and the production later on. So there is, in innovation, there is a valley of death, and valley of death is definitely when nothing happens because there is actually no funding which is belonging to that. So
funding bodies need to figure out that gap. In the US, it's done through the SBRI, I mean, different type of montage, which actually bridge that gap towards the commercial production of the startup that actually allows it later on. Now, then it was Eve about the evolution of radiation therapy from 1895, Rangen, to 2018. What I retain from his presentation mostly is that the notion of time is relative, meaning that 45 minutes and 2 hours are exactly the same for some presenters. Anyway, yes. Well, I'm sorry, but you asked for it. Then it was Uwe. Uwe presented new technological challenges in radiation therapy. What you need to remember is that treatment planning systems are not reality. I think we need to remember that. So it's a representation of the patient, so presentation of a treatment, but it's not a reality. So how do we make sure that we don't hurt the patient by assuming too much, to giving too much power to TPS? He was very adamant, I mean, that was the first time, and I mean, it comes several times in his presentation, but he was very adamant to about the need for real-time monitoring. So the fourth dimension, the time, is important in treatment. We have also to decrease the uncertainties. There will always be uncertainties. We need to understand them, and we need to decrease them in order to make things clinical. He mentioned some micro-BMRT, which Jack mentioned later on, with a 25 micron beam. And the other things was the poetry of the German language, which was about valleys of desire, mountains of regret, valleys of regret, and stings of death. So, I mean, mouthful, I think. But it was nice. Tommy Schneider presented us with something almost entirely different about interaction mechanisms in biomedicine. So that was about coupling functions. There are applications, I mean, basically, and he mentioned so dynamic inferences. He did present us applications, cardiovascular and neurological applications. So it's, you can tell there is probably an application in radiation therapy. I mean, I was kind of pointing him toward the treatment response, and there might be something there. I mean, so again, it's not entirely relevant to radiation therapy in a different approach. Vesna then presented us with availability and use of medical technology in Europe and Southeast Europe. That was actually pretty interesting. Not all data were available, not all data were recent, but there were still some trends and some counterintuitive things in the data. So it's always interesting to see things compacted and presented as such, I think. Then Benz presented us variant in radiation therapy, so that's pretty much they cover all types. Variant does everything. They have new machines, which are very nice. There is lots of software, lots of software helpers, which made me a little bit question the use for medical physicists eventually, at least in radiation therapy, because the software seems to be doing everything right now. So might be expensive though, so maybe a human is cheaper. I'm just saying, it's one angle. Then Uwe came back with about big data and mentioning that context is everything. So if you remember, that was a Black Panther in foliage. Think about tumors in the human body and not having all the information to actually figure what is actually the portion to treat. He also mentioned that there is a need to be simple. He quoted Einstein about that. But simple is, I mean, you need to be simple. If you cannot describe it simply, basically, it's because you don't understand it well enough. But on the other hand, he warned us against not being too simplistic, meaning that some things cannot be simplified beyond a certain level without actually being wrong. He mentioned, then he had a presentation about IMRT versus IGRT. So again, it's great, but real time is needed as everything changes, including during treatment. So the current TPS is of course done before treatment. The patient then moves. I mean, the physiological state of the patient is evolving. So obviously, that's during treatment as well. I'm just going through the presentation. It's kind of boring a little bit, but you get the substantific essence of everything. Sonia, talk to us about the importance of treatment verification in RT. I mean, basically, it's to decrease the uncertainties on the equipment and on the planned delivery, but also it's also to decrease the chances of accidents. I mean, there have been several accidents in RT, I mean, around the world, which have been famous in the news. You try to avoid all of these. Sometimes it's the instrument itself which is wrong, and I mean, if you don't challenge the instrument, or if you don't have an independent way to measure the instrument, then you should probably not be using it. Hoover came back with MR-guided radiation therapy, for which he had conflict of interest, but he was clear about that from the beginning, so it was fine. It's probably the future simply because you have so much soft tissue contrast. So anything which is in the soft tissue, the abdominal tumors, everything, you see so much better. There are issues with MR which are associated to the fact that not every patient will be able to actually undergo an MR for different reasons. And there are some distortions which seem to have been addressed on a Philips machine with a Linac around. I'm still a little bit doubtful that it's actually the case all the time. So this is one of these things. And of course, the cost effectiveness. I mean, these treatments are of course more expensive. The machine is more expensive. We'll see, the market will decide. And of course, he mentioned so a real-time adaptative radiation therapy, which is a blue sky thing, which is really you scanning permanence. No, I do the evening.
For you too, the time is relative.
I do the evening, don't worry about it. No, don't worry, I'm not listening, I'm not even seeing you. You know, that's the way you did it. I'm just, I'm learning from the master. So, after that, we and Mimosa presented us a little bit of CEIST, so the genesis of CEIST through Erwig Schauber, and basically it was an interesting profile. I mean, that person is probably an interesting person to have on board for that project. Then she told us that she was only interested in women's teeth anyway, so I mean, all the men left the room. but I mean, she used so scanning electron microscopes to assess the age of women, and the lactation pregnancy status, which was, it's an interesting thing. I mean, forensics is interesting for two different reasons at least. The patient doesn't move, so you can really do anything, and you know, they don't move, so you have perfect images. And the other reason is that you can actually blast the hell out of them before they smoke. You can still, you know, put a lot of dose, so you get wonderful images. I mean, of a skeletal, in particular, and all the artifacts inside. And I'm talking, mummies and things like that. So I mean, forensics is a great application. She told us so that she was thinking of PIXI, so that's proton-induced X-ray spectroscopy, because then she would get all the information. It's really a real spectroscopy, so you get all the information from the teeth themselves. The only issue being, again, that you might actually destroy your sample, but then you can probably go to mass spectroscopy and just analyze the smoke that comes out of it. It's one of his approach. Jack then presented us TPS, from TPS to radiomics. So, CT is to remain a spatial reference. This is the modality with the least spatial distortions. There are other type of distortions, I mean, and iterative reconstruction has not helped, meaning that actually the advanced field units, you need to trust them only moderately right now, because I think the iterative reconstruction have been actually destroying that linear scale. So again, I mean, always pay attention, and if you can use phantoms to calibrate, it's always better. Of course, dual energy CT also as a way to actually get more information, soft tissue in particular, and you can actually, not as good as MR, but I mean, you can get many more information if you use multiple energy and spectral CT. Quality control is necessary, but time consuming, yes. And only accurate positioning allows IMRT, important points as well. If there is no good positioning, and many sites who try to have the most patients, most possible patients throughput, sometimes they're not very careful about positioning, and I mean, that defies the whole pipeline, because I mean, if you do something very accurate upstream, and then you don't position the patient, you know, why do it? Use a shotgun, that's it, shotgun is good. Hypofractionation, so you mentioned, so he talked to us about hypofractionation, which requires real-time change tracking, so that's because you do less fractions, so we are more lethal, so you need to make sure they're at the right place. And of course, imaging should inform pretty much everything, and particularly the risk of relapse, so you can actually focus more on these patients. He had a very good line, which is, of course, that imaging is everything. I mean, I totally agree. I'm getting to my last page. But it's this morning, so I almost felt, okay, I don't need to, because I mean, your memory is probably fresh, so you know exactly what happened this morning after the banquet last night. Jack talked to us about innovative RT, so mostly big machines, and then, which includes synchrotron, monochromatic photons, which are very good. But also he mentioned some microbeam RT, so again, this is one of the approaches which should be investigated a bit more. The other thing which was interesting is the W effect, if you remember, on the flash. So the fact that the sensitivity to radiation increases after beam delivery, and there is probably a window of opportunity to use that biological, biological response to actually enhance the impact of the delivery. Roger then came to us with a time of flight, so 10 picoseconds is the goal. Marco is going to work on 5 picoseconds because it's job security at all. That's the way to go. It's quite a lot of things with time of flight. I mean, basically, if it's done well with a very small, very fast timing, I mean, you can get to direct 3D reconstruction. You don't need any more reconstruction. You get the real thing in real time, almost not well. You can accumulate. The other thing which is interesting is that it leads us to new designs for scanners, which actually allow much more flexibility, organ-specific type of scanners, but also getting closer to the action and basically getting more accurate information at different locations, because you can put all that together later on because of time of flight. There was a quote which was almost similar to Einstein, but I mean, a photon is a photon. I mean, I quoted that, so thank you. Thank you, Roger, for that. Enlightening. And that was actually pertaining to the fact that prompt and scintillation photons are not always easy to discriminate. So again, this is one thing where it can be improved on that. Future of PET CT, mostly using PET detectors for CT, so you have perfect registration, same scanner basically. Well, you have an X-ray source somewhere. Photon counting CTs and spectral CTs that can lead to better resolution for better contrast and for lower dose. The reconstruction, the iterative reconstruction that we've been. Initially, it was mostly to try to get rid of noise and different things. But I mean, the fact, the power of iterative reconstruction is that you can actually put anything in that model. So if you build a model that actually encompasses all the physics, if you're able to do that, then you have a reconstruction that actually corrects for everything. It's perfect in every sense. Then the other thing was about a bit new design. So the Explorer project of UC Davis, Simon Cherry, which is a whole body 2 meter long scanner, that has several advantages. In theory, Terry Jones says you can decrease the dose by 400%. So you can have a very low dose because you have a very high solid angle. The other thing which is of more interest to me is, I mean, I think, is 4D over the whole body. I mean, you cannot just look at part of the body and say, well, this is where I'm interested in the kinetic. The tracer kinetic functional imaging is across, is over the whole body. So if you have a cancer patient, imagine, or 4D, you can do pharmacokinetic on that, you can figure out where everything goes, you can do different things that you cannot currently do with current design. Then, Roger mentioned the ultra resolution scanner, which is breaking the barrier of resolution, 1.2 millimeter, if I remember. Yeah, about, so very good machine. And I'm moving to Helena, cellular rigidity and on tumoral progression. I had heard that before. I mean, I actually reviewed some graphs at some point where, you know, there was physics and stiffness is key in cancer. So stiffness is information. On the imaging side, actually, we have elastography, which actually provides some information about the stiffness of tissue. Ultrasound elastography, MR elastography. The MR elastography, that's always interesting because basically you have to put a boom box on the patient. I mean, I trust it used to be the case with, you know, boom, 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 anyway. But it provides information because it's a little bit like palpation, but you can go deeper, obviously, than only skin deep. Finally, we went back, we went to Sanya, who presented us a little bit more about SAIST. And so the project basically that they have about building that new very exciting project with a new research facility across 10 countries, 8 already signed up, and around hadron therapy and basically all charged particles therapy. I mean, this is if you have any chance to engage with our project, I would definitely recommend it. I mean, this is something that is going to be deep if it happens. And Mimosa talked to us about the cost ACTNet proposal, basically, which is part of that project, but to bring people together, to bring networks together. And that's also something which you might be able to engage with. So this is mostly for the future generation of medical physicists who I think are in the room sometimes. I'm done for this. Well, because I didn't have time to take notes, it was a brilliant session, very entertaining and very informative on different plans. So, I mean, I was impressed. I think your presentation skills were good. So, I mean, you don't have much more to do for the real thing. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. One after that, another boost session, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? That's it. That's good. So, the day after. Ivo started by presenting us an unknown American, Henry Becquerel. So that was interesting, really. He mentioned also the fact about the effective dose equivalent is not meaningful for individuals, but the risk is related to age. So the younger you are, the more at risk you are. That's what I mean, from radiation therapy, sorry, it's not everything else. And as for low dose, it was still unknown, basically, the risk is unknown. Is that correct? Yeah, it's good. Yeah. The other thing I noticed in Hugo's presentation is that he had the concept of the formalism of MERD. MERD in French means something else, but MIRD actually in English. So it did wake me up at the time when I heard it, but anyway. Then we had Roger's presentation was about translational imaging, basically, which is a bridge between in vitro and the human. So that's a preclinical imaging. That's an essential step of research stage. The interesting thing, of course, is that when you can acquire images, basically all modalities for humans are represented in preclinical system. You have even more modalities there. But when you want to do processing which are similar to the ones you would apply to human data, you need to convert your data so that they actually are understood as human data. I did that several times. I had a problem at some point when we had a navigating system for surgery which was retuned on humans. I could not turn it down, but I mean, imaging was, it's fine. Yeah. Then we had Asha talking to us, presenting Theranostic. Theranostics is basically using similar compounds for imaging as a surrogate of basically deposition, and then putting a killer isotope instead of the imaging isotope. So in this case, that's lutetium-177, seems to be the only one. and then figure out actually how it's going to kill the tumor cell. The main problem is that it's not none of these tracers are really highly specific. They don't go only to the target, they go elsewhere in the body. So internal dosimetry is key, and it's not an easy problem to solve. I'm just trying to present where you can contribute to politics. Yes, sure. Then it was back to Roger. This one was about further translation, about quantification, pharmacokinetic modeling, meaning that exactly the information in the images is not only static, particularly in functional imaging. So you need actually to have full sequence for the acquisition, and then from that extract the parameters in through pharmacokinetic compartmental analysis. Uwe mentioned something, which is to remember that signal isn't the tumor. So it's not because you see something on an image that it's true. Remember the migrate pipe and this kind of thing. So it's always in medical imaging it does apply to. And then of course the step we need to go to our precision and personalized medicine. The concepts are a little bit different, but I'm not going to go into details. You can look it up. Now, after that, it was Marina. Marina presented to us, she's not here, but another Skopje Imaging Center, which is very well configured. I mean, we all thought it was a great venue for anyone in the world, basically. So, and it actually pointed, there was a discussion, which is, I think, of interest here, is that clearly that setup can be scaled up, but that means also that actually putting together the different sites in national or regional fashion will definitely boost, improve their potential for region. Then that was Marco, and of TOFPET US ultrasound. Okay, so that's the development of a TOFPET probe which can be combined with an ultrasound endoscope, so you can have multimodality imaging, obviously. The application would be for diagnostic and diagnosis and interventional applications. There was a notion of multi-digital SIPM, so which was actually key to that detector. And again, this instrumentation development, it's still ongoing. I mean, it's not like we have a bunch of detectors, we're going to put them together and we have a machine. We'll come back to that with Roger later on. There was also a discussion, I mean, something which was interesting discussion is the need for funding bodies, the EU or any other funding bodies, to figure out how to bridge the gap between the academic development and the production later on. So there is, in innovation, there is a valley of death, and valley of death is definitely when nothing happens because there is actually no funding which is belonging to that. So funding bodies need to figure out that gap. In the US, it's done through that SBRI, I mean, different type of montage, which actually bridge that gap towards the commercial production of the startup that actually allows it later on. Then it was Eve about the evolution of radiation therapy from 1895, again, to 2018. What I retain from Eve's presentation mostly is that the notion of time is relative, meaning that 45 minutes and 2 hours are exactly the same for some presenters. Anyway, yes. Well, I'm sorry, but you asked for it. Then it was Uwe. Uwe presented new technological challenges in radiation therapy. What you need to remember is that treatment planning systems are not reality. I think we need to remember that. So it's a representation of the patient, so presentation of a treatment, but it's not a reality. So how do we make sure that we don't hurt the patient by assuming too much, to giving too much power to TPS? He was very adamant, I mean, that was the first time, and I mean, it comes several times in his presentation, but he was very adamant to about the need for real-time monitoring. So the fourth dimension, the time, is important in treatment. We have also to decrease the uncertainties. There will always be uncertainties. We need to understand them, and we need to decrease them in order to make things clinical. He mentions the microbeam RT, which Jack mentioned later on, with a 25 micron beam. And the other things was the poetry of the German language, which was about valleys of desire, mountains of regret, valleys of regret, and stings of death. So, I mean, mouthful, I think. But it was nice. Tommy Schneider presented us with something almost entirely different about interaction mechanisms in biomedicine. So that was about coupling functions. There are applications, I mean, basically, and he mentioned also dynamic inferences. He did present us applications, cardiovascular and neurological applications. So it's, you can tell there is probably an application in radiation therapy. I mean, I was kind of pointing him toward the treatment response, and there might be something there. I mean, so again, it's not entirely relevant to radiation therapy in a different approach. Vesna then presented us with availability and use of medical technology in Europe and Southeast Europe. That was actually pretty interesting. Not all data were available, not all data were recent, but there were still some trends and some counterintuitive things in the data. So it's always interesting to see things compacted and presented as such, I think. Then Benz presented us Varian in radiation therapy, so that's pretty much they cover all types. Varian does everything. They have new machines, which are very nice. There is lots of software, lots of software helpers, which made me a little bit question the use for medical physicists eventually, at least in radiation therapy, because the software seems to be doing everything right now. So might be expensive though, so maybe a human is cheaper. I'm just saying, it's one angle. Then Uwe came back with about big data and mentioning that context is everything. So if you remember, that was a Black Panther in foliage. Think about tumors in the human body and not having all the information to actually figure what is actually the portion to treat. He also mentioned that there is a need to be simple. He quoted Einstein about that. I mean, that simple is, I mean, you need to be simple. If you cannot describe it simply, basically, it's because you don't understand it well enough. But on the other hand, he warned us against not being too simplistic, meaning that some things cannot be simplified beyond a certain level without actually being wrong. He mentioned, then he had a presentation about IMRT versus IGRT. So again, it's great, but real time is needed as everything changes, including during treatment. So the current TPS is of course done before treatment. The patient then moves. I mean, the physiological state of the patient is evolving. So obviously, that's during treatment as well. I'm just going through the presentation. It's kind of boring a little bit, but you get the substantific essence of everything. Sonia, talk to us about the importance of treatment verification in RT. I mean, basically, it's to decrease the uncertainties on the equipment and on the planned delivery, but also it's also to decrease the chances of accidents. I mean, there have been several accidents in RT, I mean, around the world, which have been famous in the news. You try to avoid all of these. Sometimes it's the instrument itself which is wrong, and I mean, if you don't challenge the instrument, or if you don't have an independent way to measure the instrument, then you should probably not be using it. Uwe came back with MR-guided radiation therapy, for which he had a conflict of interest, but he was clear about that from the beginning, so it was fine. It's probably the future simply because you have so much soft tissue contrast. So anything which is in the soft tissue, the abdominal tumors, everything you see so much better. There are issues with MR which are associated to the fact that not every patient will be able to actually undergo an MR for different reasons. And there are some distortions which seem to have been addressed on a Philips machine with a LINAC around. I'm still a little bit doubtful that it's actually the case all the time. So this is one of these things. And of course, the cost effectiveness. I mean, these treatments are of course more expensive. The machine is more expensive. We'll see, the market will decide. And of course, he mentioned so a real-time adaptative radiation therapy, which is a blue sky thing, which is really you scan in permanence. No, I do the EV.
For you too, the time is relative.
Do the EV thing, don't worry about it. No, don't worry, I'm not listening, I'm not even seeing you. You know, that's the way you did it. I'm just, I'm learning from the master. So, after that, we and Mimosa presented us a little bit of CEIST, so the genesis of CEIST through Erwig Schober, and basically it was an interesting profile. I mean, that person is probably an interesting person to have on board for that project. Then she told us that she was only interested in women's teeth anyway, so I mean, all the men left the room. but I mean, she used so scanning electron microscope to assess the age of women, I mean, and the lactation pregnancy status, which was it's an interesting thing. I mean, forensics is interesting for two different reasons at least. The patient doesn't move, so you can redo anything. You know, they don't move, so you have perfect images. And the other reason is that you can actually blast the hell out of them before they smoke. You can still, you know, put a lot of dose, so you get wonderful images. I mean, of a skeletal, in particular, in all the artifacts inside. And I'm talking, you know, mummies and things like that. So, I mean, forensics is a great, great application. She told us so what she was thinking of PIXI, so that's proton-induced X-ray spectroscopy, because then she would get all the information. So, you have real spectroscopy, so you get all the information from the teeth themselves. The only issue being again that you might actually destroy your sample. But then you can probably go to mass spectroscopy and just analyze the smoke that comes out of it. It's one of his approaches. Jacques then presented us TPS from TPS to radiomics. So CT is to remain the spatial reference. This is the modality with the least spatial distortions. There are other type of distortions, I mean, and iterative reconstruction has not helped, meaning that actually the on-field units, you need to trust them only moderately right now, because I think the iterative reconstruction have been actually destroying that linear scale. So again, I mean, always pay attention, and if you can use phantoms to calibrate, it's always better. Of course, dual energy CT also as a way to actually get more information, soft tissue in particular, and you can actually, not as good as MR, but I mean, you can get many more information if you use multiple energy and spectral CT. Quality control is necessary, but time-consuming, yes. And only accurate positioning allows IMRT, important points as well. if there is no good positioning, and many sites who try to have the most patients, most possible patients through good, sometimes they're not very careful about positioning, and I mean that defies the whole pipeline, because I mean if you do something very accurate upstream and then you don't position the patient, you know, why do it? Use a shotgun, that's it, shotgun is good. Hypofractionation, so you mentioned also, you talked to us about hypofractionation, which requires real time change tracking. So that's because you do less fraction, so we are more lethal, so you need to make sure they're at the right place. And of course, imaging should inform pretty much everything, and particularly the risk of relapse, so you can actually focus more on these patients. You had a very good line, which is of course that imaging is everything. I mean, I totally agree. I'm getting to my last page, but it's this morning, so I almost felt, okay, I don't need to, because I mean, your memory is probably fresh, so you know exactly what happened this morning after the banquet last night. Jack talked to us about innovative RT, so mostly big machines, and then, which includes synchrotron, monochromatic photons, which are very good. But also, you mentioned some microbeam RT. So again, this is one of the approaches which should be investigated a bit more. The other thing which was interesting is the W effect, if you remember, on the flash. So the fact that the sensitivity to radiation increases after beam delivery, and there is probably a window of opportunity to use that biological, biological response to actually enhance the impact of the delivery. Roger then came to us with a time of flight. So 10 picoseconds is the goal. Marco is going to work on 5 picoseconds because it's job security, I told him. That's the way to go. It's quite another thing with time of flight. I mean, basically, if it's done well with a very small, very fast timing, I mean, you can get to direct 3D reconstruction. You don't need any more reconstruction. You get the real thing in real time, almost not well. You can accumulate. The other thing which is interesting is that it leads us to new designs for scanners, which actually allow much more flexibility, organ-specific type of scanners, but also getting closer to the action and basically getting more accurate information at different locations, because you can put all that together later on because of time of flight. There was a quote which was almost similar to Einstein, but I mean, a photon is a photon. I mean, I quoted that, so thank you all for that. And that was actually pertaining to the fact that prompt and scintillation photons are not always easy to discriminate. So again, this is one thing where it can be improved on that. Future PET CT, mostly using PET detectors for CT, so you have perfect registration, same scanner basically. Well, you have an X-ray source somewhere, but photon counting CTs and spectral CTs that can lead to better resolution better contrast and for lower dose. The reconstruction, the iterative reconstruction that we've been, initially it was mostly to try to get rid of noise and different things, but I mean, the fact, the power of iterative reconstruction is that you can actually put anything in that model. So if you build a model that actually encompasses all the physics, if you're able to do that, then you have a reconstruction that actually corrects for everything. It's perfect in every sense. Then the other thing was about a bit new design. So the Explorer project of UC Davis, Simon Sherry, which is a whole body 2 meter long scanner, that has several advantages. In theory, Terry Jones says you can decrease the dose by 400%. So you can have a very low dose because you have a very high solid angle. The other thing which is more interest to me, is 4D over the whole body. I mean, you cannot just look at part of the body and say, well, this is where I'm interested in the kinetic. The tracer kinetic functional imaging is across, is over the whole body. So if you have a cancer patient, imagine, over 4D, you can do pharmacokinetic on that, you can figure out where everything goes, you can do different things that you cannot currently do with current design. Then, Roger mentioned the ultra resolution scanner, which is breaking the barrier of resolution, 1.2 millimeter, if I remember. Yeah, about, yeah. Yeah. So, very good machine. And I'm moving to hedona, cellular rigidity and on tumoral progression. I had heard that before. I mean, I actually reviewed some grants at some point where, you know, there was physics and stiffness is key in cancer. So stiffness is information. On the imaging side, actually, we have elastography, which actually provides some information about the stiffness of tissue. Ultrasound elastography, MR elastography. The MR elastography, that's always interesting because basically you have to put a boom box on the patient. I mean, it used to be the case with, you know, boom for many. But it provides information because it's a little bit like palpation, but you can go deeper, obviously, than only skin deep. Finally, we went back, we went to Sanya, who presented us a little bit more about SAIST. And so the project, basically, that we have about building that new, very exciting project with a new research facility across 10 countries, 8 already signed up, and around adjuvant therapy and basically all charged particles therapy. I mean, this is a, if you have any chance to engage with our project, I would definitely recommend it. And this is something that is going to be big if it happens. And Mimosa talked to us about the cost ACTNet proposal, basically, which is part of that project, but to bring people together, to bring networks together. And that's also something which you might be able to engage with. So this is mostly for the future generation of medical physicists who I think are in the room sometime. I'm done for this.
You said anything about the last session?
Well, because I didn't have time to take notes. It was a brilliant session. Very entertaining and very informative on different plans. So I mean I was impressed. I think your presentation skills were good. So I mean you don't have much more to do for the real thing. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir.